Welcome, everyone, to this session of Sunstone. This session of Sunstone is number 126, Reading Dreams as Personal Revelation with Michael Vinson. I'd like to remind you all to silence your cell phones. Also, at the end, we will ask you to share if you have experiences that are relevant to this talk, and you will need to use the microphone. And those are right here, and then I can bring them to you if you don't feel like standing up, which I completely understand. So it is my pleasure to introduce today's speaker. I just met him, but I can already tell he's super engaging, and I really like him. His name is Michael Vinson. He's a longtime dream interpretation enthusiast, an avid student of C.G. Jung and Joseph Campbell. He was in the Scripture Notes columnist for Sunstone Magazine for 6 years. He has been a frequent presenter here at Sunstone, and he teaches the monthly podcast at Sunstone Institute. His most recent graduate degree from 2010 is a master's degree from the Faculty of Divinity at the University of Cambridge. He lives in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and spends way too much time lurking on Facebook, don't we all? So let's just turn the time over to him.
Is this one working?
Yes.
Come on up a little bit closer. Semi-circle. Yeah. Come on. Get your powdermilk biscuits on. That natural shyness that you have in you, let it just, push away now. Come up to the first two rows, at least that far. And then maybe we'll get even closer than that. I just want to make sure I'm being recorded, that's all.
In the circle.
That's right, the magic circle. I'm really glad that you showed up here today. And if the recording, is this recording?
Yes.
And it's a really important topic. I think it's something that a lot of people tend to dismiss. They can sort of look at it and go, I had the craziest dream. I'm often surprised on Facebook, she mentioned that's one of my addictions, that people will post a dream on Facebook, because once you begin to realize what I know about dreams, and what you may know about dreams already, people are revealing an awful lot about themselves on Facebook and about their interpersonal lives that if they knew what they were saying out loud in regular language, they would never admit to. I mean, the dreaming part of ourselves is something that cares nothing about your ego, cares nothing about how important you think you are, it cares nothing about, there's no morality in dreaming. There's no morality in the sense of, I want to be nice to you, I want to build you up. I want to help you. Dreaming doesn't care about that at all, apparently. And so oftentimes our dreams are meant to take us down a peg, and sometimes they do it in the meanest way possible, which is a very strange thing when you think about it. You know, we think about our relationships with other people in dreaming. How we relate to other people, we would never treat someone, or we shouldn't anyway, the way a dream would treat us in terms of giving us information. We would never go up to someone and insult them. And yet, our dreams will do that to us. So dreaming is some sort of ancient language that's evolved long before the sense of social niceties came into the way we think about proper decorum and proper behavior. Dreaming is a symbolic language. And the interesting thing about this to me is that in all the languages that I've studied, and by the way, I do have a PDF outline of this talk that I will happily email to anyone. And so if you want to get started here and just put your emails down, I'll send you the PDF. It'll also have the references for the books that I'm going to reference later on, so you don't need to write those down when I mention them. And you can come up and look at them afterwards. And they're the ones that I consider to be the most useful, based on having purchased way too many. And so I can save you hundreds of dollars just by coming to this little session here. So this ancient language is symbolic, but the interesting thing is there are no ancient languages among humans that were symbolic. People used to think that Egyptian, for example, was a symbolic language because of the hieroglyphs. But the way they actually decoded it was when they realized that the hieroglyphs were symbols for sounds and not symbols for a meaning. So there are no languages that we have evolved as humans that actually use symbols, and yet dreaming is a symbolic language. It's only understood through metaphor. The only way that I can make sense of why dreaming speaks to us this way, the way we would have evolved, or created, you take your pick, is because if you look at animals dream. And if you want to amuse yourself on YouTube for a little bit, just put cats dreaming or dogs dreaming. And what the scientists have been able to do is they've been able to disable the sleep and the muscle inhibitor that acts in when you sleep. People that sleepwalk are having problems with the muscle inhibitor while they sleep. And so they've been able to do this in cats and dogs. And then literally, while the animal is sleeping, it will act out a dream. They can see what the dream is. So the cat, the dog, is seeing a visual image of something, and it's taking that image literally. It's seeing this visual image, it takes the image literally, and it's acting out. It'll prowl, it'll hunt, it'll pounce, it'll take something back, all while it's sleeping. We don't do that in our dreams, luckily for most of us, because we have that inhibitor that keeps us from moving while we dream. So if you take this idea of this literal visual language, combine it with human evolution, and then we have the result that at some point in consciousness, when we became conscious in our evolutionary process, then at that point, the dream shifts to a metaphor. It's still a visual language, but it's a visual language that speaks to us through metaphor. Joseph Campbell has an amusing story about this. Maybe some of you have heard it before. After one of his books was published, he went on a radio tour, and at one radio station, I think in the South, the guy interviewed him, and he said, I'm a tough interviewer. I'm going to give it to you hard. And Campbell said, that's fine. I'm all right. Go right ahead. And, you know, he's taught at Sarah Lawrence for 38 years. He's ready for this guy. And the guy starts right out because Campbell's talking about the metaphors of different myths and all the different myths, and this is what the book was about. And the guy says, a myth is a lie. And Campbell says, no, a myth is a metaphor. And the guy's like, no, a myth is a lie. And there's no reason why we should pay attention to a lie. And Campbell's trying to reason with him, and they're not getting anywhere on this. A myth is a lie, and a myth is a metaphor. And so finally Campbell tells him, give me an example of a metaphor. I want to see if you understand what I'm trying to say. And the guy says, he doesn't want to. And they argue back and forth, and finally he agrees to try, and he says, John runs very fast. John runs like a deer. And Campbell says, that's a simile, that's not a metaphor. Campbell said, a metaphor would be, John is a deer. And he said, that's a lie. John's not a deer. Now you can see the problem in this mythic language. So if you think of your dreams as your own personal myth, it's a myth that speaks to you through metaphor. Then it's a different way of sort of unlocking the things that you've been seeing that don't seem to make any sense. And in fact, some Jungian therapists will actually take the babblings of a schizophrenic person, someone who's obviously deluded or crazy or going through an episode of some kind, and they will look at what they're saying metaphorically, and it will actually relate to what's going on in the disease with them. So once again, if you can look at it symbolically and learn to read the metaphors. Now, the problem with this, and it's not easy, I mean, it's definitely, if it were easy, there would be like a little easy how-to book. We'd all download it and, you know, everything would be solved. Oftentimes when people have a dream, the first thing they think about is, well, I need to go buy a dream dictionary. And they're wondering, well, which one should I buy? Basically, with dream dictionaries, all you need to know is just don't buy any of them. The problem is, that may be that person's definition of the metaphor, but this language has evolved in such a way that it is entirely reliant upon you and your experiences and your emotions and your feelings for the symbols that come up in your dreams. So I'll give you some general guidelines, but the idea behind this is that you need to write your own dictionary. And so when you see something that recurs in a dream, and I'll show you how to figure out what that might mean a little later, the idea is that you will need to go into and just write your own dictionary, as it were. And so that's why I recommend keeping a dream journal. If you haven't, anybody here keep a dream journal already? 1, 2, 3, 4. So a dream journal is a great way to practice because, first of all, if you're not remembering your dreams, people often claim, well, I never dream. But everybody has 5 to 7 dreams every night. If you're getting the right REM sleep, you're going to have some dreams. And the idea behind the dream journal is it's just sort of telling yourself, your psyche, your soul, whatever it is, that you're now paying attention to these things When you awaken, there's a small amount of a chemical that's released into your mind, and the idea behind that chemical is to erase the dreams. So if you can learn to practice writing down your dreams, you'll actually find it easier to remember them. So keeping a dream journal is valuable for that. Go ahead.
I don't want to take away from your presentation, and we need to carry on. It sounds as though your presentation is going to focus primarily on the metaphors and symbols of dreams as metaphors and symbols. What about dreams that are literal?
Okay, so we'll get to that. So the question was asked since you didn't come up to the microphone, and that's one thing that we'll need to do when we start taking the dreams and things. We want to make sure we record it so that all my Facebook friends can download the session and amuse themselves. No, they won't. But that's a great question. How do you know when a dream is literal versus when a dream isn't? And we're going to get there in just a minute. But thanks for asking the question, because it's an important one to know. Not every dream is metaphoric, but let's say 99%, 95%. But there are some that are literal, and we'll talk about those. So the other thing that you can hang yourself up on in dream interpretation is by going to psychologists and trying to figure out which psychologist says what about dreams and what they mean. Every psychologist, there are a lot of, at least five different schools of psychology that have developed theories of what dreams mean. And each one is sort of right in its own way for that particular problem. So you have Freud, and his, he was the one that first offered some great insights into dreams and what they mean. And then Freud sort of realized that, you know, dreams are these sexual things, and really that's where the answer would lay. And he was right, in a way, for some dreams. And then you had Adler, who was one of Freud's students, that realized, well, they're not all sexual. Some of the dreams are power-type things. Power relationships and about, you know, these things in life, getting ahead or not in life. And Adler was like, that's really what we're looking at here, is this aspect of power. Well, he was right for some things. But the problem is, each person that sort of latches on to this idea of what dreams are about tends to make the whole theory, and they think that that's all the dreams are about. And dreaming seems to be much larger than any of that. Sege Jung came along and said, dreams are really about the spirit side of man. And one interesting way to think about these different theorists and how they talk about dreams is to think about the Kundalini and the chakras. And if you think about the, I don't know if you're familiar with this or not, but if you think about the lower chakras, like the three lower chakras tend to be the ones dealing with ego and power, with food, with reproduction, the elementary things, the material things of the world, the instinctual things that we have, that we often see, dominance, sex, food. And if you think of those as your three lower chakras, for example, then the theories of Freud and Adler actually tie very nicely into those three lower chakras, into things that are going on in your life. And what Jung came along and said was the upper, what you might consider to be the upper chakras, the spirit side of man, is where he really found the biggest insights. And what I think, to Jung's credit, Jung broke with Freud very early on. Freud was sort of they had a father-mentor relationship. It was like, and Freud really considered him to be his son, and that he would carry on, and then the son abandoned the father, and Freud felt very Oedipal about it. I don't know why. Freud really denounced Jung for the rest of his life. But Jung never did, and actually Jung went to some lengths in all of his published works to attribute to Freud what his contributions were, and acknowledge using Freudian methods when necessary in his therapy. But the vast majority of his patients, he said, don't come to him with a neurosis that deals with power, or a neurosis from an inability to deal with life, or a sexual neurosis. The vast majority of Jung's patients that came to him instead came because they lacked meaning in their lives. They had a sense, a profound sense of no meaning to their life. And Jung realized that the psychology that he was developing was dealing with this spirit side. So we sort of have these two sides to ourselves that the Hindus define as the lower and upper chakras. But the psychologists have sort of worked their own way into it as well. And so Jung sort of deals with that spirit side. So, but dreams are practical and useful even without that. You don't need to have or follow a school of psychological interpretation to have dreams have a useful impact in your life, to be able to get some value from dreaming just the way they are right now. And so you can get all of that stuff from dreams. So I've got four or five books that I'll show you afterwards, and we'll go through those. The basic thing about dream dictionaries, I mentioned how useless most of those are, but if you can get a book of symbols, and symbols that that you can draw on, then you can sort of amplify the images that you've seen in your dream. You can take those and you can use a symbol dictionary to sort of suggest meanings to yourself. The most important thing to realize is that you're the ultimate interpreter of your dream. There's no one else that can come along and say, this is what your dream means. Because, as I mentioned earlier, it's a unique language to you. So what you can get, though, are aids and guides to sort of assist you in dreaming. And symbol dictionaries are very good at doing that. They can suggest meanings to you. And when something clicks with you, then the symbol dictionary was useful for you. And I have a nice little collection of symbol dictionaries that I use when I have an unusual image or even an animal or something that appears in my dreams that I'm not familiar with. I'll sort of think to myself, do I have a relationship to this thing? Have I seen it before? If I haven't, then I'll take it and I'll try to go and see if I can find it in a symbol dictionary. And so I have an interesting example of this that I can share with you. I had a dream about two summers ago. And I'm just going to look real quickly here. I have a really lousy sketch of what I had in my dream. Here it is. So, in my dream, and I'll just share this with you briefly, sort of an example of how symbol dictionary can be useful. In the dream, I was walking through a forest somewhere in some tall grass. And I don't like snakes, by the way. So, you know, I have that natural fear of snakes. And as I'm walking along, I suddenly realize there's a snake, a large snake, right next to me on the path. And I'm just frightened. I run somewhere quickly. But when I stop, I realize that the snake is now in front of me on a log. And then it's divided into two snake legs that go out like this. And it has the body of a man, like the chest of a man. And then it has the head of a rooster. And I was just blown away by this thing. And I was looking at it, and it wanted me to dance. It wanted me to dance. And so it was reaching out the arms to me, and there was an Indian guy standing next to me, a man from India. And I said to him, is this snake dangerous? He said, oh yes, very deadly. I started running. I ran away from the snake, but it didn't chase me. And as I was running, I realized that I had been underground the entire time. I was running up the roots of a tree that were like steps coming up from the underground. And then when I was back on the surface, I looked back at the hole that I had just come out of and realized that the thing had not chased me. Even though our audio listeners won't be able to see this, you can see my little sketch that I drew of the creature here for a minute in the dream. I had a friend that works with dreams, and I showed him this sketch. And, you know, as you just saw for yourselves, it's a pretty lousy sketch. And he said, you know, maybe you shouldn't draw in your journal anymore. I was like, oh, thanks a lot. So I went with that, and I tried Googling half man, half snake. That's Google's like my friendly dream dictionary helper in the morning when I wake up. And I Googled that to see what would come up, and I found out about Nagas. And Nagas are Hindu deities. They're half man, half snake. It was close, but not exactly what I had seen. But and Nagas are very poisonous. And they are very powerful. And they play an important role in Hindu mythology. So, and the Indian connection, sort of the feeling that I had of the dream was that as well, but that was as far as I got with it at that point. Although I realized that, you know, the snake was probably trying to tell me something, and maybe I shouldn't be so afraid of it. A couple of months later, I was reading a biography of Jung, and he wore a signet ring on his hand that was a Gnostic deity. And this Gnostic deity had two snake legs had the chest of a man and had the head of a rooster. And it's called Praxis. And I've got a picture of that. We'll just take a minute and I'll show it to you. Seen or studied or known about. It's pretty wild. Dreams are pretty amazing things. Where the dream pulls its material from, I have no idea. Except to say that it's there. Now, Jung had a theory that he called the collective unconscious. Maybe it exists, maybe it doesn't. I have no proof for it. Other than to say, I've had other experiences where I've dreamed foreign words and languages that I've never studied. German, Japanese, and a word from a native Yurok tribe on the upper coast of California that was in their vocabulary. And so, and a couple of others that I haven't figured out yet as well. So, in dreaming, just try to be open to this and realize that you might be pulling in, most of the dream symbols that you have will be things that will come from your own life. A few of them, though, will be things that wherever dreaming is pulling us from, whether it's a genetic inheritance, through time, who knows where this comes from. Or God, depending on your preference. Just remember that dreaming pulls these things from all over the place, and we really just sort of be open to it, and it may be that you won't find out within the next day what your dream meant. I once had a dream about the Yurok Indian word. It took me a long time to figure that one out. I Googled the word. I had dreamt that I was supposed to go after and find something named Malaquah. And I wrote the word down in my dream journal, Malaquah. And it was very important to me, and it was somewhere out west. And I knew that aspect of things. But I had no clue. And when I put Malaquah into Google, and I spelled it all the different ways that I could think of, I had seen the word written in my dream. But, you know, I varied the spelling just in case, you know, Google might be more particular. And so, for Malaquah, I mean, I got, it's the last name of a lot of Kenyan runners that are Muslim. So I was thinking, well, maybe there's an African connection there, maybe there's something like that. And finally, something else steered me. And I had gone through sort of looking, wondering if it was a Native American word. And in the dream, it related to somebody falling off of a cliff, off of a crag. And later on, when I was able to actually find the word, it's a word in the Yurok Indian language, and the Yuroks lived on the Pacific coast in Northern California. And Malaquah means crag or cliff. And where that stuff comes from, like I said, I have no idea, except for the fact that we just need to be open to it. So the question was asked, how do we know when a dream is literal versus when a dream isn't? So that's a great question. I would suggest that most of your dreams, and this is an important thing to remember when you're trying to interpret them, most of your dreams are entirely about you. If you see a house in a dream, it's representing some aspect of you. If you see a car in a dream, it's representing you. If you see anything in a dream, if you see other people in a dream that you sort of vaguely know and you're familiar with, most likely those people represent aspects of yourself. So the first rule in sort of trying to decode your dreams is to realize that all these other people you see in the dream are usually some aspect of yourself. And it's really the hardest for ourselves to realize what the dream is saying to us. Sometimes other people can see it much easier. And that was even true for Jung. I'll read a dream and we'll go through it and take it apart and show you what he thought his dream was about and what I think his dream is about. But occasionally you will have dreams that are more objective. And so the objective dream is about someone in your real life, or it might be something more literal. An objective dream will usually relate to someone you're closely involved with on a daily basis. So if you're dreaming about people that you sort of know on Facebook, or that you sort of know through social occasions, odds are your dream is a subjective dream. If it's an objective dream, it'll relate. And even an objective dream with people that you're very close to, it may still speak the message of the dream through metaphor. In other words, it'll tell a story metaphorically, even though it's relating to the people in your real life. But like I said, almost all the time, the dream is about you yourself, and it's not actually about them. It's very unusual to have a dream about someone else. Did you have a particular dream or a question in mind? It looked like you did. Could you go ahead and share?
My wife had a dream early in the summer about hiking up a mountain trail with our daughter behind her, and she came upon a rattlesnake in the trail, and she leaped over the snake and turned around and stopped the daughter. Later, we were hiking up a mountain trail, and there was a rattlesnake in the trail. The daughter was behind, and she didn't see the snake until she was upon it. She leaped over it, and she turned back and stopped the daughter. And then the snake went off the trail.
Alright, so that would be this example of dreaming of a snake on a trail, jumping over the snake, and saving someone else from being bitten by it. And then having that actually happen a month later on a mountain hike is what I would consider to be a precognitive dream. Some dreams can be precognitive. They're dreams that presage something that actually happens in your life as a warning, as a practicality, as whatever it is for your life at that time. And I think that's a very safe way to go with that.
But how would you know that?
You don't. There's no sure way to know it for sure. And so you need to be open to exploring, is there another message in that dream? And even in a precognitive dream, there may have been another message there as well.
Life can speak to us through metaphor.
There you go. Life can speak to us through metaphor as well. That's probably the best way to put it. And it may be that there's another message there as well.
Clearly there's something there about protecting your family.
So I would actually explore some of that if your wife... It's your wife's dream and not yours, right?
Right.
So that would be for her to explore and for her to look at if she wanted to. And if she doesn't, the nice thing about dreaming is if you want to ignore your dreams, if you want to just sort of push them back and repress them, is the dreaming will just come back and increase the terror associated with the dream until you begin to pay attention to it. So you can repress it all you like, you can bury it, you can ignore it. Dreaming doesn't care. If the message is important enough for you, dreaming will just keep amping up the emotional aspect of it until you begin to pay attention. And then once you do pay attention, suddenly it's just totally unamped. The emotion, the terror gets totally turned down. Yeah, go ahead.
One of the things that I found really helpful, I've been keeping a dream journal since 2006, and I've recorded about 1,200 dreams. And one of the things that I found really helpful is to keep it not in a written journal, but in a Word perfect or some kind of editable and searchable format, because then after you've recorded a certain number of dreams and an unusual symbol keeps recurring or there are other things in a dream, you can actually do a search on a symbol within your own dream journal. And that has really helped me to sort of interpret dreams. The other thought or comment is that... it left me. So
we'll get to it in a minute. Thanks for the words. Yeah, so that's a great idea. I keep mine in a journal, and I made an index to my journal, but it would have been far easier if I had just done it on a computer and could search it through a Word document. Renee, do you have a question?
Yeah. So I have this one dream symbol I always dream about, and I think I'm awake. It's the only kind of dream I have where I open my eyes and I see something and see and register it as real, and that I'm lucid, not conscious within a dream, but it actually is a real thing. And then I wake up and it's not, then it has disappeared. Only one symbol, but every time I dream about it, I'm always, awake. So do you have anything to say about states of consciousness that have to do with symbols and what it might mean to have one recurring symbol where you always dream of it in that state?
Sure. That's a great question. A vivid dream like that is unusual because most of our dreams aren't that vivid. This is a dream where you are convinced that you're awake or you think you're awake. And you see it in this waking state when you're actually sleeping still. Among the things that you might explore that you could look at in that are to what do you need to wake up to see this? And that sort of sounds kind of simple, but oftentimes dreaming takes something simple like that. And so you could meditate and play with the idea of what do I need to wake up to? What am I not seeing? And then in connection with the symbol, maybe that'll register for you. I had an experience like that as well, I'll share with you. I was at a hotel in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and I had to get up very early the next morning to hit the road. So I had set my alarm for 4:30 in the morning. And all of a sudden, the sun came in through the windows. And I woke up and I realized that it was 8:30 in the morning. I had slept right through the alarm. And I was way late. And I was laying there just thinking, oh, how could I have done this? And I reached over and I grabbed my wristwatch and I could see that it was 8:30. I was like, holy crap. And I was looking around the room. And at some point looking around the room, I realized that I was dreaming. I woke up. It was dark. It was just before 4:30 a.m. But at the moment when I was in that dream, it was so vivid and so real to me. I could see everything. I could feel the sunshine on my face. I was going to pull the covers back over my head to block the sun from my face because I could feel it on my cheeks. My curtains were closed. There was no light coming in the room at all. It was totally dark when I actually woke up. I thought about that dream, and I realized that the dreaming might have been telling me to sort of wake up to the things that I'm not seeing. To wake up to the world inside dreaming, for example. To wake up to your dreams. And realize that this world that we think is real for now. I mean, we're here in this material world for now. But what if the dream characters actually think that their world is real too? We'll get to some more comments.
You just made me think of the thing I forgot.
Well, hang on to it. Just make a note to yourself.
Okay.
All right. So that was subjective versus objective with a few side branches off. And I mentioned that everything in the subjective dream is about you. Dreams have not only an intellectual meaning, like, you know, it relates to this or it relates to that, but they have an emotional meaning as well. So if you have an emotion in a dream, make sure you write that down as well. Did you feel scared? Did you feel happy? Did you feel anxious? Did you, whatever it was, nervous? Did you feel embarrassed? Were you angry? The emotional aspect of dreams can be as important as the other things as well. So pay attention to the emotional aspect. And the nice thing about working with your dreams is you don't even need to fully understand what a dream means to get the meaning out of it. So you can just hold that emotion of your dream. You don't have to even decipher the dream. You can just spend some time holding that emotion of the dream. What was the emotion of the dream? And just sort of meditate with it. Hold it. Don't try to repress it. Don't try to bury it. Don't try to change it. If it was a sad one, don't try to make it a happy one. And then ask yourself, what's this emotion telling me? What's this relating to in my life right now? And be honest about it. And so dreaming seems to feel that that's an important aspect of what we do as well, to be honest about our emotions. Not that we have to be honest necessarily in a rude or a crude way to other people about them, but only that we need to be honest with ourselves about our own emotions and not to bury them from ourselves. All right, so let's go to scary dreams and nightmares. I mentioned that before people would often amp up the terror factor. Dreams will amp up the terror factor in dreams to get you to pay attention to them. If it's an important enough subject. Oftentimes, dreaming is very patient. If you think of dreaming as a labyrinth, if you've ever walked a labyrinth, they have one here at the U. It's up on the other side of the Humanities Building over here. If you have some time today and you want to amuse yourself, walk a labyrinth. Because walking a labyrinth, what you realize in walking that labyrinth is you're trying to get to the center. And sometimes you feel like you're very close to the center. You're just one line away from it, but you're actually quite a ways from it. And other times when you feel like you're quite distant from the center of the labyrinth, you're walking around the outside edge, you're just a few steps from getting to it finally. And a labyrinth works like dreaming in that sense. If we think about dreams being as the center of ourselves, and if we think about dreaming, Jung thought the dreams were a balance in our lives, a homeostasis. And so homeostasis is this idea that plants do what they need to do to sort of get into a balance. you know, a little more of this, a little less of that. And in, remember I mentioned the material, the lower chakras versus the spiritual, the upper chakras. If you think about dreaming, trying to be a way to balance that for ourselves, then it's trying to balance the lower and the upper. Are you paying too much attention to being spiritual? Then you're going to have some dreams that are going to be about some pretty crazy sexual things. Because dreaming is trying to get you to pay more attention to the carnal and the sensual side of your life that you might be repressing. Are you just having dreams? Not about that. Maybe you already pay too much attention to the carnal side of your life. In which case, the dreaming is going to focus on the other aspect of it. So it's really, there is some sense of balance for you that's yours. And dreaming seems to know what that is. And dreaming is just trying to bring your life into balance by either addressing that upper or the lower chakra is the easiest way to think about it. And so in your dream, that's one way that you can look at what your dream is relating to in your life. Is it relating to a problem in the lower half of my chakras? Is it relating to something in the upper half? This also relates to a life division as well. So Freud's and Adler's theories tend to relate to the problems in the first half of life. They tend to relate to people that are unwilling to embrace the responsibility of life or unwilling to embrace the problems and acknowledge the problems they have. And those are often problems faced with the first half of life. Making a living, getting ahead, establishing your reputation and your career, whatever it is that you're doing, those are problems in the first half of life. Those are like the things that Freud and Adler were looking at. The lower chakra things. And the second half of life relates to the things where you begin to realize that now it's time to let go of some of those things. You know, your kids have left the house. They get the hell out of their lives. Quit messing with them. Leave them alone. You're not a parent any longer. You're to let go of that. Maybe, you know, you've overworked too hard at your career for too long. Now it's time to do what the Hindu third stage of life is, which is go into the force. It's time for you to let go of some of those things. So you have a first stage problems in life, and second stage that relate to sort of the lower and upper chakras, and dreaming addresses all of these things in you. It's not divisible by how old you are. It's just where you are on that path of life. And it's where you, you know, that's really all that it relates to. So let me read a dream from Jung here to talk about the idea of the terror dreams and nightmares and what they might mean. When Jung was in his early 50s, he went to Africa on an expedition. He was very interested in primitive psychology. But he was very disappointed upon arriving there and after spending 3 months on an expedition among some very primitive peoples. And primitive being used, of course, in the negative anthropological way today, but among peoples that, the native peoples. And he wanted to have a dream about them. I think what he really wanted to do is he wanted to immerse himself in the culture. And secretly, I think what he wanted was to be initiated into the tribe, you know, in some way, even if it was only a dreaming. But it didn't happen for him. And in fact, he only had one dream about a black man during the whole time that he was in Africa. And this is his dream, and this is what he thought about it. But remember, this is a misogynist European man of, you know, the 1920s with his cultural framework and outlook, and you know what they would have thought about Africa. So I'm reading from this book. And this, is, by the way, is Memories, Dreams, and Reflections, and I'm reading from page 272. During the entire trip, my dreams stubbornly followed the tactic of ignoring Africa. They drew exclusively upon scenes from home. Even the most impressive events of the trip were rigorously excluded from my dreams. Only once during the entire expedition did I dream of a Negro. His face appeared curiously familiar to me, but I had to reflect a long time before I could determine where I had met him before. Finally, it came to me. He had been my barber in Chattanooga, Tennessee, an American Negro. In my dream, he was holding a tremendous red-hot curling iron to my head, intending to make my hair kinky, that is, to give me Negro hair. I could already feel the painful heat and awoke with a sense of terror. Now, this is Hume's take on his dream. He's terrified by this. He's had this experience. I took this dream as a warning from the unconscious. It was saying that the primitive was a danger to me. At the time, I was obviously all too close to going black. I was suffering an attack of sandfly fever, which probably reduced my psychic resistance. In order to represent a Negro threatening me, my unconscious had evoked a 12-year-old memory of my Negro barber in America, just to avoid any reminder of the present. So this was Jung's take on his dream. And it's a terror dream for him. You know, he's in the barber chair, and instead of giving him a shave or a haircut, the barber's going to give him African hair. He's going to take the hot iron to his head and make his hair kinky and curly. What are some other ways you think of looking at that dream? Think about it in your mind for a minute. What's going on in there? What if the dream was to tell him that he needed to incorporate more of the African in his life? If you think of hair as a symbol of power, if you think of, you know, as sort of that symbol of power, of life, of everything else.
Or the way you think.
If you think of hair as the way you think. And then what if you're to incorporate more of that and he was resistant to it, unless it appears more of as a terror dream for him? Because he's afraid of it. He doesn't want to do it. So that's an alternative way of looking at a dream. I mean, here's the man that's world famous for interpreting dreams, and yet on his own dream, he's sort of very comfortable with this level of, oh, I was going too black, so, you know, that's like, oh, I'm a European man, I can't do that. You know, I might learn hip-hop, I might learn all kinds of wild stuff. But yeah, what if that was the purpose of his dream? And I mean, he's not here, we can't ask him. And ultimately, he is the ultimate interpreter of his dream, just as you are. But my idea in sharing this was just to sort of give you an idea of a way of looking at, another way of looking at your dreams, being open to what they might mean. And as I said, oftentimes it's the thing that we're most uncomfortable with, because. So we've got a microphone here we'll pass around. I'd like to ask you to think that if you have a dream you'd like to share, let me take that, if you wouldn't mind, and we'll play with it a bit and try to sort of dissect and see what we might get out of it.
Oh, I actually did have a dream I wanted to share, but one comment on the dream.
Sure.
I think for the way I've always approached dreams, I've always approached it as like a reflection of what's going on. Like it helps me have a different perspective on my own life. And so it's not necessarily the dream is trying to like tell me something. It's only just reflecting, and then what I see for the reflection. So what I see there is like his own racism is being reflected in the dream, and then like he's like, oh, what's the dream trying to tell me? It's trying to tell me racism is okay. So it's like I approach it differently. Like, oh, now you have to see it. But anyway, a dream I had recently, and this is a bizarre dream though, but it was it like really was really vivid in my mind. Something recently was I have a child self. My child self, and they have a little bow tie, and they walk around and see things, and just watch things happen. And I was, my child self was walking around my grandma's house, and there was a missionary that was murdered, and everyone was trying to figure out, there was an investigation, everyone was in church clothes trying to figure out who murdered this missionary that no one liked. And when I woke up, I remembered that no one actually liked this missionary. And then I remember from there, I came from there, and the door is open. And I'm like, oh shoot, the door's open. So I like walk over the door, and it's like dark outside, and there's these two raccoons out there. And I'm like, oh no, I'm like, I better close this. And the raccoons, I think they're going to be scared and run away. My child self does, at least. I think that as well. So like, I start to close it. My child self starts to close this like door, but then raccoons start to run at me. And one of them gets through the screen, you know, slides through. And I'm scared, but my child self like puts down their hand and they let the raccoon sniff it. And I wake up and I realize that those weren't raccoons. They were actually, this is the weird part, they were actually giant guinea pigs. This big. I was like, wait, that was not a raccoon, that's a guinea pig. For some reason it resembled a raccoon in my head. I was thinking about the fact that like I have a friend who we're no longer like friends, and it always like bothers me that we're not friends anymore, and their favorite animal is a guinea pig. So it's like, was that somehow related? I don't know. Anyway,
let's take that apart if you don't mind.
All right.
Ask you some questions about the dream.
Okay.
As far as I remember it. So, tell me about what connections or feelings do you have about the house that you were in?
So it was my grandma. My grandma said,
"Get another cat," because I'm not going to remember all this if I don't write some of the accounts.
Oh, okay. It was my grandma's house. And so, like, my grandma, I think myself, like, there's missionary stuff going on. Maybe this has to do with Mormonism on some level. My grandma pretends I'm still Mormon.
and brings up, and she's like, she'll write to me and say, like, oh, I loved your testimonies that you gave on your mission and things like that. I resigned from the church, so like, it's kind of this one thing that you're like, I don't know what to say. You know that I'm not Mormon, but we never talk about it. You know, it's that passive-aggressive, like, old Mormon approach. And no offense to passive-aggressive old Mormons. It's not right approach. And so I wonder if that's related to someone.
We'll get there.
Okay.
I'm going to ask you about the next image in your dream.
Okay.
So the idea behind this is to sort of take each of the images in your dream and then try to find what your connection is, what connection you have, what that relates to you in your own life. This is sort of developing the dream dictionary that we spoke about earlier. So let's go with the next thing that happens in the dream. There's a Mormon missionary.
Yeah, there was a Mormon missionary who was murdered. Not in the house. Just make that clear. We were all looking at pictures of it happening. And we were investigating. It was a large group of people, all in church clothes, investigating it. And my child self was there, just like looking around and just observing.
So tell me, okay, so your connotation, your connection with Mormon missionary, the idea of a Mormon missionary guy.
Well, I was a Mormon missionary, and so I was wondering, so my idea was maybe it has to do with the death of a certain Mormon self.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, the death of a belief.
But, I'm going to ask you for an interpretation here. Really,
okay.
I want to know what your feelings are.
My feelings towards missionaries?
Yeah.
In general?
Right.
And
by the way, let me just preface this oral sharing session here. Please don't share anything outside this group with what you hear and without asking the person. Dreams are very private. They're a personal thing. And you really, it's not a thing that you can share with someone else without asking the person whose dream it is. I just wanted to preface that. I forgot to mention that earlier.
Yeah.
So we really want to hold this in confidence. We want to respect other people's confidence. And also, I would appreciate if someone wouldn't throw out any interpretations until I ask for them at the right time. So let's just go through the step-by-step process right now.
All right.
So,
yeah, so no more interpretations. But missionaries, I'm scared of missionaries, to be honest. I get nervous. I'm all like, I feel bad for them. I have like a form of like pity towards missionaries. I'm expressing lots of feelings, I'm sure.
Okay, that's fine.
Come, yeah.
Let's go to the next thing in the dream image. Is it your grandma, or is it going to the door?
It's going to the door. So
okay.
Like, I'm watching this group investigate this thing, and then I go to the door. Actually, I don't remember my grandma in the dream. I just remember it was my grandma's house.
Your grandma's house, that's fine.
Yeah. And so I go to this door. The door's open, okay? Dark outside. I walk open the door.
So tell me what you think of, what's your connection to the door? When you think of the door, what do you think about?
What do I think about doors? I think about, sometimes I think about, you know, entering new worlds, you know, entering new rooms, new ideas, new people, meeting new people. But also, I mean, this door in particular, I was actually kind of like nervous that it was open. Maybe I was scared of what was on the outside. I mean, of course it should be scared of these giant guinea pigs.
All right. That's fine. So we have an emotion, and we have that connotation.
Right.
Now let's go to the raccoons. What's the do you have a childhood experience with raccoons?
Okay.
Or do you know raccoons from comics or what?
Yeah. So raccoons would steal food at Boy Scout camp. That was always the thing. We'd see these raccoons. I was scared of rabies of raccoons. I saw a raccoon walk around during the day one time, and that scared me because I was like, why is it walking around during the day? What if it bites me or something? And so I have this fear that. I'm like, okay, that they want to steal their food, I'm okay with that. But they get close to me, there's a problem. You see what I'm saying? Like, if you have your food, just don't get too close.
All right. And, but one of them comes in the door.
Mm-hmm.
Your child self holds out its hand, and at what point do you realize they're not guinea pigs?
But I have to wake up and realize that.
Okay.
I wake up and look back to it and realize that they were just guinea pigs.
But you thought they were raccoons. So tell me your reaction to guinea pigs.
Huh?
Guinea pigs. Tell me about
guinea pigs. Right. So I was dating this girl for a year, and then we were still friends, and she would like guinea pigs. That's about as far as it goes. And then we don't talk. We don't talk for the last 5 months.
So, all right. So this actually, no. All right, I appreciate you sharing this thing. So what I would suggest, Curtis, as a way to explore this dream on your own, is to take each of these images that we talked about and to replace them in retelling the dream to yourself with the connections that you have to those things. So if I were to do it, and you can sort of correct me here, I'm not sure if I remember all the aspects, but you come into the house of someone who still thinks you're Mormon, even though you're not. So you're coming into the presence of people who think you're Mormon, even though you're not. And while you're in that presence, you have some fear of missionaries in the presence of those people. At some point you leave them, you walk away from them, and you enter, you're nervous about a border that you're crossing. And before you cross the border, you decide to close it briefly. Because there are some instinctual things there that might be stealing energy from you, that might be taking something from you. And in your attempt to keep them out, the instinctual things that might be stealing energy from you, one of them still gets in. And it isn't as harmful as you thought it was going to be. And then when you wake, you realize that it wasn't even what you thought it was. It was something else entirely. So there's sort of a way of walking yourself through the dream. And then you can ask yourself, okay, after retelling that, where in my life am I in a situation like this? And that might open some doors for you. Something might click for you. And you might go, oh, that's kind of like this or that. Or my relationship with so-and-so or such-and-such. So anyway, those are just some ways of exploring it. You're the ultimate interpreter of your dream, and you're the one that ultimately decides what your dream is about. That's the most important thing to remember. Does someone else have another dream? Yeah, all right.
I have a dream. This is very theological specific. So if you don't understand about the temples and then the church...
That's all right.
It's all right. Cool. Can I do that? Very specific. I come into a large temple. It could be the Los Angeles temple, which I came from anyways. I come in and wonderful people greet me at a greeting table. And they wanted to give me a souvenir. It's for all new time first entrants. But I've been there before and I didn't want to take a souvenir. I wanted to save it for somebody else. But nevertheless, they wanted me to have it anyway. One of the souvenirs was a velvet bookmark. Beautiful, it said the Holy Ghost. Holy Ghost. And so I took that, I chose that over the other souvenirs, their pencils and other things. Then, at that point, I was led into a larger open room, and there was a man dressed in white, but he had a short white beard, and he was rather just around middle-aged. He looked a little sly for me, but he had a dove that was on his shoulder that was gray, and then it turned white, and it surprised him. But that was what I saw, that the dove turned from gray to white right on his shoulder. Then there was a little boy play acting, and he was very serious in his play acting, but he was going down the aisle, and he was going through some play acting, whatever he was doing, and very serious. But I felt uncomfortable because I had been in the temple for a week or two or something like that, and I felt that the ceremony had entirely changed, and I was extremely worried about it. But nevertheless, I needed to be there. I felt I needed to be there. I didn't have a companion. I think she was ill, and I felt that I didn't have a companion there, so I felt out of place. Then they gave me a tie that was patterned where the lower end of the tie was way too long, and so I took off part of that because it wasn't needed for anything. Then I go into that other open area with the double doors, and people were in there in street clothes, and they had ice cream cones that are 2 feet long cones that were pre-cooked.
Okay, it's cool. It's great.
Okay, but 2 foot long ice cream cones that were made out of paper. But the ladies were really loving it. That's what I remember, the smile on their faces with it. There were three images that represented the Godhead dressed in white in the front of the area that they were all standing, but they were in street clothes. I felt out of place because there were some new people getting married for the first time, and I felt like I was out of place everywhere I went. But I looked at them, And then there was one other person who was represented the come to my room. This is the kind of the religions of the world, in a sense. And that's what I got from that. They're, come to my area. I have something to tell you that's different. Come over here. And I said, well, that's ridiculous. I know right offhand that I know that I don't want to be there. So why are you asking me to be there? I don't want to go. So I looked at that. I knew I needed to be there. I knew specifically that I needed to, but I felt uncomfortable because the ceremonies had changed, and I didn't know anything about it.
Thank you very much for sharing that. Let's take some of the connotations quickly through. If someone needs to go on, well, we've got 5 minutes still here, so you're not excused yet. Okay, so yeah.
Before, it seems like there's some emotional content that needs to be described more specifically.
Okay,
like you described
what was your emotion of the dream?
Yeah.
When you woke up, was it? Did you have an emotion?
Oh, yeah, I know specifically, I'll never forget it. I know that I'm represented that. Yeah, but the emotion was that I felt I needed to be there. That was the
okay.
Emotion.
All right. Okay, that's fine.
But I felt out of place because I wasn't dressed right, or I felt like there was something new that just happened and I didn't know anything about it.
All right. So things have changed, and you didn't realize that they had changed, and yet you felt the need to be there. So let's take that as the emotional basis that you're entering the dream with. Let's just try to go through these as quickly as we can. The temple, it's like word association. You've got 5 seconds. Go. You go to the temple often? You never
yeah,
go to the temple.
Yeah,
do you love going to the temple? Do you not like going to the temple? Okay, great. So the temple is like another home? Okay, that's fine. I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. I'm just trying to come up with connotations. Souvenir. Give me the idea behind the souvenir. What do you think about souvenirs? I mean, are they chintzy? Do you buy souvenirs when you go on vacation? Do you never buy them?
No,
do you think?
No, but it's something I wanted others to have because they haven't been there before. I wanted to save it for them.
Okay, so you wanted to... So the idea of the souvenir was something valuable.
Yeah.
So it was a valuable thing.
But they wanted me to have
it. The velvet bookmark. Right, but it was something that you also wanted for yourself.
Yeah.
Okay. How about the slime man and the white beard? I mean, do you like people with beards, or do you like, or do you are you automatically trying to get suspicious when you see someone with a beard?
It was closely shaven. It was just, it just reminded me of people that I've known before that are a little slick.
All right, so you're thinking of like salesman slick, like someone that you wouldn't trust in a business dealing. So. Okay.
When you go to the temple, do you like the temple workers there?
Let's keep it on the dream track here.
Right.
This
guy in the white beard, is he a temple worker?
He was just a presenter. He wasn't an actual... He was just part of the whole scene.
Okay.
But the temple workers I mentioned, they're always so kind and
right.
They're always so nice and helpful. That's what they're...
Okay.
They don't have beards.
What about the bird on his shoulder? What's your connection to Doves?
Well,
what do you think about that?
Well,
you
know, Holy Ghost always, but it was gray and then it turned white on his shoulder, and I don't know if it's that he was trying to show that he was kind of in the mode.
It surprised him when that happened?
Surprised him when that happened. I figured I represented it as the times of the priests and the during Moses' time where they also replicated everything that happened from...
Right. What about... Do you like magic tricks? Have you ever seen a magic trick?
Oh, I've had it.
Okay, the idea. So, something magical happens at this point. I'm trying to think of a connection to your life. So I'm trying to relate to here. And not to an interpretation that's much right now. So, let's just go with something magical.
Did the bird belong to him, or was it separate from him?
It just flew on his shoulder. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And turned from gray to white.
Was it an intruder?
Well, all right, let's go to the next one now. The boy was... You had the feeling that the boy was play-acting when you went through this.
Yes, he was going through scenes and showing different aspects of things.
Like in the room where people assembled to watch the temple movie and stuff?
Yeah.
He was going down the aisle while they're sitting there waiting for the temple movie, but instead he was putting on a little show.
It wasn't a movie.
There was no movie.
It all changed. The whole scene.
Everything
had
changed.
And that's why I felt uncomfortable.
Okay. And, oh, okay. That's right. All right.
But he was very serious.
He was very serious.
Was he part of the new ceremony, or was he?
Now, I think you said that. So when you say he was play acting, he was serious. He wasn't like playing around. It was more like, do you go to plays?
Yeah.
Have you been to plays? Are you an actor?
No.
Okay.
I watch it.
All right. Do you enjoy movies and things?
I don't go to a lot of movies.
Okay. All right. I'm just trying to think of a connection to your life on the serious aspect of the boy.
Somebody
were you serious
boy
as a small boy?
The boy was me. Someone said, yeah, that boy.
Were you a serious boy?
Oh, no, I was actually a light-minded kid, but I became serious.
Okay.
And through there was a time, if you know the color codes, I was yellow, then I became blue. I don't know if you know the taste of the color codes.
I've heard of that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I became sort of serious.
All right. What about the pattern tie?
I have no clue. I have looked on.
What about your own personal ties? Do you ever wear loud ties to church? Or do you go more conservative with them? I mean, do you ever wear like Mickey Mouse ties to church?
No. No.
Okay.
No, I just basically color coordinate.
Color coordinate. And on the conservative side, or do you go on the loud side too? Purple ties on certain Sundays?
Yeah, I have a few of them.
It's 10:45.
Okay. All right. Well, if we just step quickly through your dream here, from what we have so far. One place for you to explore this is to sort of retell this dream, is thinking of a place that you were comfortable in, but you're not any longer. That a place, perhaps, that you've arrived in your life, where you were comfortable, it was something you were familiar with, and now it's changed. And maybe it's what's changed or your feelings about it. And that there were valuable things, even in this changed aspect. There may be that there was a non-trusting aspect of it for you, but there were magical things in it too. And that maybe at some point your dream might have been sort of reflecting the fact that you were taking some things too seriously, that it was time to lighten up a little bit. Those are just some things that occurred from writing it down, and only you yourself know for sure what your dream means in your life. Anyway, I want to thank you all for coming today.
Thank you.